I want to begin with an indisputable fact, namely that during the 19th century, unprecedented power compared to which the powers of Rome, Spain, Baghdad, or Constantinople in their day were far less formidable, unprecedented power was concentrated in Britain and France, and later in other Western countries, the United States especially. This century, the 19th century, climaxed what has been called the rise of the West. And Western power allowed the imperial metropolitan centers at the end of the 19th century to acquire and accumulate territory and subjects on a truly astonishing scale. Consider that in 1800, Western powers claimed 55%, but actually held approximately 35% of the Earth's surface. But by 1878, the percentage was 67% of the world held by the Western powers, which was a rate of increase of 83,000 square miles per year. By 1914, the annual rate by which the Western empires acquired territory had risen to an astonishing 240,000 square miles per year. And Europe held a grand total of roughly 85% of the Earth as colonies, protectorates, dependencies, dominions, and commonwealths, one of them, of course, being Canada. No other associated set of colonies in history was as large, none so totally dominated, none so unequal in power to the Western metropolis. As a result, says William McNeill in his book, The Pursuit of Power, and I quote, the world was united into a single interacting whole as never before. And in Europe itself, at the end of the 19th century, scarcely a corner of life was untouched by the facts of empire. The economies were hungry for overseas markets, raw materials, cheap labor, and profitable land. And defense and foreign policy establishments were more and more committed to the maintenance of vast tracts of distant territory and large numbers of subjugated peoples. When the Western powers were not in close and sometimes ruthless competition with each other for more colonies, and it's good to remind ourselves that the great historian of empire, Scottish historian of empire, V.G. Kiernan, has said, all modern empires imitate each other. When they were not in ruthless competition with each other for more colonies, they were hard at work settling, surveying, studying, and, of course, ruling the territories under their jurisdictions. The United States experience was from the beginning founded upon the idea of an imperium, of an empire. The United States was founded as an empire, a dominion state or sovereignty that would expand in population and territory and increase in strength and power. There were claims for North American territory to be made and fought over with astonishing success. There were native peoples to be dominated, variously exterminated, variously dislodged. And then, as the American Republic increased in age and hemispheric power during the 19th century, there were distant lands to be designated vital to American interests, to be intervened in and fought over. For example, the Philippines, the Caribbean, Central America, the Barbary Coast, parts of Europe and the Middle East, Vietnam and Korea. Curiously, though, so influential has been the discourse insisting on American specialness, altruism, and opportunity, that imperialism in the United States as a word or ideology has turned up only rarely and recently in accounts of United States culture, politics, and history. But the connection between imperial politics and culture in North America, in particular in the United States, is astonishingly direct. American attitudes to American greatness, to hierarchies of race, to the perils of other revolutions, the American Revolution being considered unique and somehow unrepeatable anywhere else in the world, these have remained constant, have obscured the realities of empire, while apologists for overseas American interests have insisted on American innocence, doing good, fighting for freedom. Graham Greene's character, Pyle, in his novel of 1951, The Quiet American, embodies this cultural formation with merciless accuracy. Yet for citizens of 19th century Britain and France, empire unlike in America, empire was a major topic of unembarrassed cultural attention. British India and French North Africa alone played a tremendous role in the imagination, the economy, the political life, and social fabric of British and French society. And if we mention names like Edmund Burke, Delacroix, Ruskin, Carlyle, James and John Stuart Mill, Kipling, Balzac, Nerval, Flaubert, or Conrad, we would be mapping only a tiny corner of a much larger reality than even their immense collective talents cover. There were scholars, administrators, travelers, traders, parliamentarians, merchants, novelists, theorists, speculators, adventurers, visionaries, poets, and every variety of outcast and misfit in the outlying possessions of these two imperial powers, each of whom contributed to the formation of a colonial actuality existing at the heart of metropolitan life.